Blog Talk Radio.
Bosick here, perspective, and tonight, as we do every Tuesday night and Thursday, we're doing it live on blogtalkradio.com, and you can go to blogtalkradio.com, and then you can go to Patriot Nation Radio, because that's where we're at, Patriot Nation Radio Network. We do it Tuesdays and Thursdays live, 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, and we also do a recorded show. A conservative perspective, and that is able to be heard on the Talk America Radio Network, radio.org. You can go there. They have two audio streaming channels, the Liberty stream and the Justice stream, and ACP is heard at times throughout the day and throughout the week there. Good to be with you. We are tenuously podcasting tonight in the middle of a thunderstorm. And it could be one of those where I might be better off trying to reanimate a dead guy that I put together. So the possibility is, you know, we may go off the air. We may get booted due to electrical storms. But as long as we're here, we're just going to hang tight and keep talking. I hope you guys had a pretty good weekend. Lots of stuff been going on since Friday. The long-awaited and much ballyhooed Inspector General's report came out. Not really digging what I'm seeing there. There's a couple of ways to look at that. The late cause celeb for the left now has to do with immigration. And it has to do with an immigration law that was enacted by Bill Clinton 25 years ago. And it was enforced by George W. Bush. It was enforced by Barack Hussein Obama Jr. III. And it's now being enforced by President Donald Trump. Only now, since Donald Trump is enforcing this law, it's a terrible law. He's a horrible man. We're all racists. This is not who we are. This is just terrible, terrible stuff. And last night on social media and wound up jumping into an argument with some left-wing cats about this. And it always comes down to the same thing. It always comes down to the same thing. The law be damned. It's about feel. It's not about thinking. It's about feeling. One of the things I said a long time about the left, the liberals, they're visceral thinkers. And by that I mean they go with their gut. It's all about feeling. You ask a liberal something, what's their opinion on something, and 9 times out of 10 they're going to say, well, I feel that, instead of saying I think. Conservatives, more center, more right-wing folks, they have a tendency to be more rationally based in their thinking. It's just how it is. So these guys say, you know, forget about the law. These poor, starving children are being kept in cages, and they're being beaten, and I think sending some of the chubbier ones to the White House to be eaten. It's terrible what's happening here. If you agree with me on this, I just goose-step yourself to hell, you nuts. And that's not the case. I mean, it's really, truly not the case. But there are a large number of people out there who believe this, and they're beating the drums on it everywhere you go. And what I would say to that in response to these things that are being said, you know, and again, you know, if you try to point out anything rationally to these cats, you're racist, you're a hater, you're an anti-Latino, you're terrible. You're just an awful person. And I would say to these guys that spout this stuff, shut up. Just shut up, okay? When Bill Clinton signed into law, you didn't get a weed up your O-ring when Barack Obama, for 8 years, along with the same 8 years that George W. Bush enforced this law, so we've got almost 24 years of enforcing this law. But now that Donald Trump is enforcing this law and adhering to it, well, good golly, Miss Molly, Katie, barred the door. They need to do something about that little orange bastard. It's just another cudgel that they've elected to take up because it, you know, it resonates. It's an emotional issue. Play on the emotions. Not dead air. Getting a drink. The fact of the matter is, these migrant children, these illegal aliens, I don't like the term illegal immigrant. I don't like the term asylum seeker. They're not seeking asylum. Seeking intolerance. It's just that simple. They're illegal aliens. They're not asylum seekers. They're not illegal immigrants. They're illegal aliens. And these kids that cross the United States, either by themselves or with adults, and I hope you're sitting down, they have a nearly 3 times higher standard of living when they are in federal custody than the average middle class. Now, let me say that again. Illegal alien children who cross into the United States either by themselves or with adults have a nearly 3 times higher standard of living when in full custody than the average middle-class American child. In the fiscal year 2017, the federal government referred nearly 41,000 unaccompanied minor border crossers, illegal aliens, to the Unaccompanied Alien Children Program, which is facilitated by the Office of Refugee Resettlement. My God, I can't believe the United States has an Office of Refugee Resettlement. Resettle them back where they came. According to the data provided to Breitbart News, each unaccompanied minor costs American taxpayers roughly $34,660 annually, nearly three times a higher standard of living than the average American middle-class kid. In an American middle-class family of four, each child costs their parents about $12,980 a year. This is far below what unaccompanied border crossers, U.S. taxpayers, when they entered the Unaccompanied Alien Children Program. Ladies and gentlemen, that is criminal. That is positively criminal. Prager University, one of my favorite go-tos, and you know I share a lot of things from Prager University here on the program. And what I have coming up is it's about 6 minutes. It's Charles Krauthammer, a remarkably intelligent man who is going to be leaving us soon. Sadly, last week he revealed he has only weeks to live. Some cancer has returned, and there's nothing left to do to be comfortable and accept the inevitable. And I, for one, will certainly miss him because, as I said, he's a remarkably intelligent fellow. He's a year ago for Prager University called Build the Wall. And again, common sense, conservatism, rational thought, the conservative perspective, Dr. Charles Krauthammer.
Every sensible immigration policy has two objectives. One, to regain control of our borders so that we decide who enters, and two, to find a humane way to deal with the 11 million illegal immigrants who now live among us. Start with the second. For both practical and moral reasons, America cannot and will not and should not expel 11 million people. That leaves us with two choices: ignore them or figure out a way to legalize them. Ignoring them hasn't worked, but there's also a huge problem with legalization. It creates an irresistible incentive for new illegal immigrants to come. We say, of course, that this will be the very last, very final, never again, we're not kidding this time, amnesty. And everyone knows it's phony. That's what was said in 1986 when we passed the Simpson-Mazzoli immigration reform. It turned out to be the largest legalization program in American history. Nearly 3 million people got permanent residency. There was no enforcement. We now have 11 million new illegal immigrants in our midst. The irony of this whole debate, which bitterly splits the country, is that there is a silver bullet that would not just solve the problem, but also create a national consensus behind it. A vast number of Americans who oppose legalization and fear new waves of immigration would change their minds if we could radically reduce new, i.e. future, illegal immigration. And we can. First, build a barrier. Call it a wall, call it a fence, call it what you will. Add cameras and sensors, add drones, beef up the patrols. All that matters is that we regain control of the border. Fences work. The triple fence outside San Diego led to a 90% reduction in infiltration. Israel's border fence with the West Bank produced a similar decline. Even holier-than-thou Europeans have conceded the point. Hungary, Macedonia, Bulgaria, Austria, Greece, Spain. Why, even Norway have all started building border fences to stem the tide of Middle Eastern refugees. Then enforce two other measures, a national e-verify system that makes it just about impossible to work if you're here illegally, and a functioning visa tracking system, since 40% of illegal immigrants are visa overstays. The wall fence will, of course, be ugly. So are the concrete barriers to keep truck bombs from driving into the White House. Sometimes function has to supersede form. And don't tell me that this is our Berlin Wall. When you build a wall to keep people in, that's a prison. When you build a wall to keep people out, that's an expression of sovereignty. Of course, no barrier will be foolproof, but it doesn't have to be. It simply has to reduce the river to a manageable trickle. Once we do, everything becomes possible, including dealing with our 11 million illegal immigrants. So let's fix that. Track the visas, do we verify, build the damn barrier. It's ridiculous to say that it can't be done. And who would certify that the border is back in our control? I would have a neutral party, perhaps a commission of retired jurists, issue the judgment. Once they do, we legalize the 11 million, granting them the right to stay and work here. We can't give them citizenship. That's a bridge too far. You don't get to join the political destiny of the country by entering it illegally. But any children born here would be American, which means that over time, the issue resolves itself. The American people are legitimately angry at the price American society has paid due to illegal immigration. But they are also a generous people. Once they're assured that we do indeed control our borders, that anger will abate. A national consensus will emerge. Radical border control followed by radical legalization. No mushy compromise. A solution requires two acts of national will. Putting up a wall along with e-verify and visa tracking, and absorbing those who broke our laws to come to America. This is not a compromise meant to appease both sides without achieving anything. It's not some piece of hybrid legislation that arbitrarily divides illegals into those with five-year-old roots in America and those without, or some such mischief-making nonsense. If we do it right, not only will we solve the problem, we will get it done as one nation. I'm Charles Krauthammer for Prager University.
To keep our videos free, click here.
Charles Krauthammer, Prager University. This is the thing, and this is what has to be acknowledged. It is, you know, it's just part of the logic, part of the reality of the situation. There are a number of things that define a nation. And paramount among those things are its borders, its language, and its culture. When you think of France, there are certain things you think about. You know where France is. You can see it in your mind. You can see its borders. The language that they speak, and you know a little bit about their culture. And it's no different in any other country, whether it be Spain or Portugal or Australia or Lithuania or England or Norway, or Canada, or the United States. Those things, those three, borders, language, and culture. Define the nation, and by definition, give that nation its sovereignty. Now, in reality, if we stop and think about France as it exists today, as it's become overrun, like most of Central Europe, with this Islamic invasion, I know a lot of people are going to bristle when I say that, but there's nothing else to call it. These people move into these areas, they're not interested in assimilating. They're not interested in becoming members of, you know, practitioners of French culture. They're not going to Spain to become Spaniards. They're not assimilating, in other words. They're leaving the places that they were. And they're coming to these new places, and they're basically wanting to establish a way of life exactly like what they had where they were. They're not looking for asylum. They're not looking to become productive members of society. They're looking to change that society. Away with French society and with French culture and replace it with fundamentalist Islam. A lot of people say extremist Islam. I disagree. It's fundamentalist. These guys that go out and commit these atrocities and do these things, convert or die, and subjugation, rape, and violence and murder, they're doing what the Quran tells them to do. My question is this. Why are Democrats and the left and a large number of fundamentally uninformed people screaming about these alien children, these illegal alien children? You don't have to look far in the United States, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the ships at sea, to find poverty, true, abject poverty. Now, my question, and we've had a war on poverty since the 1960s. LBJ declared war on poverty. I live in West Virginia. I can tell you about poverty. I can tell you stories about it, just like some dude from inner city neighborhood in Detroit, or Philly, or New York, or anywhere else where poor people are. I think you know what my question is going to be. Why are we spending that money on those children when we have had children here for the last 50 years needing? I don't know the answer. And I'm not asking to be sarcastic or any of that stuff. I want to know why. Why are we spending this money on these children when a 15-minute less drive from my house I can find men and women who feel genuine need? American citizens. I don't know. But I'm inclined to with Dr. Charles Hammer when he says, we have to have a border. We have to have a border. Without the border, it's going to be very, very difficult to maintain. We need to seal our borders. We need to reestablish control over our borders. The truth of the matter is we don't have control over our borders. Just that simple. And we need to reestablish that. That is, you know, that's a national security thing, guys. They talk about people from Afghanistan, from other Middle Eastern countries that are coming past, that are coming through from Mexico? Why? What are a bunch of Afghani men in their mid-30s, late 20s, early 30s, trying to get into America illegally through Mexico? I want to know that story. And they find a lot, the ones that get caught. Now, again, not everybody gets caught. Why are they spending that money on those kids instead of American kids? Now, I know there's probably not many Democrats that listen to this, but, and thank you, and welcome, by the way, new listeners. We're happy to have you, and we appreciate you listening. But the point I'm trying to make is, these policies have to change. And I'll tell you something else. If these policies do change, if America redirects that $34,000 annually that they're sending out to these foster agencies, if they turn that over to the middle class kids in this country who need it, the poor in this country who need it, think about that. Well, number one, these kids have been hurting for a long time. These families that have been hurting will get relief, and they can put themselves and stabilize themselves into some position where they can get out there, they can retrain, they can find a job, and they can restore some of their dignity instead of spending a lifetime in government dull. The other positive will be that if these people who are coming here to exploit the entitlement program, these welfare migrants, if you want to call them that, they're not going to come because they're going to be getting that sweet deal. It's a sensitive subject to a lot of people. And it's important that on subjects like this, because again, border control is a national security issue. And friends, we don't have control of our border. We got a lot of sharp people, you know, keeping an eye on things once they get in, I'm sure. That's, you know, we live in as safely as we have been able to. But here's the thing. Sooner or later, that luck's going to run out. Conditions being what they are now. That stuff. You know, we're not going to be able to dodge the next bullet. So it's essential that we secure the border. I don't understand what the argument is against it. Like I said, rationally thinking people see this as the national security matter that it is, and we have to contain our borders. And not just the southern border, Canada, too. Yeah, they're nice people. God bless. I feel sorry for them. Justin Trudeau. Golly, it's a wanker. Holy cow. Don't even get me started on that guy. But you know, they are our allies, true. But they may not be as vigilant as they need to be. And people exploit that, bad actors exploit that as a means to egress into the United States. And draw their plans against us. Something to think about. We are down to the bottom of the hour. And I'm going to run through here and see what I'm going to listen to. Because it's time for that bottom of the hour music interlude. I think I know what it's going to be. We will be back with more of a conservative perspective right after this.
Thank you. of Beethoven. She loves the way Puccini lays down his tunes and Booker's song was written from her room. Everybody wants one.
Oh, yeah. Good to be here with you. James Bostic, Conservative Perspective on the Patriot Nation Radio Network here at Blog Talk Radio. Now, this is the program we do live, obviously, twice a week. We do it Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. The Patriot Nation Radio Network here at blogtalkradio.com. We also have a recorded version of the show that goes out over the weekend, and that goes to the Talk America Radio Network. And you can go to talkamericaradio.org, and you can check them out. Outstanding hosts, top drawer programming. They have two streaming audio channels. They're the Liberty and Justice streams. ACP can be on either one of those two streams at various times throughout the week. Well, the Inspector General's report came out, and this thing has been, and I'm no exception, because I've been wanting to hear what this guy had to say. And, you know, at first it was going to be at the end of February, then they moved it to the middle of March, and then it was at the end of April. And at the end of April, they said, well, it'll be out sometime end of May, 1st of June. And sure enough, it was. And a lot of people are really disappointed in a number of things about this. And I'm still on the fence. I haven't read it all. It's like 500 pages. But there have been a lot of people out there who have been. And I've been reaping the benefit of their hard work. An issue, and at the root of this, and what was needing to be determined, was whether or not the Mueller investigation, the whole Russia collusion thing, if it was legit, or if it was based on political bias. And an American thinker, Thomas Lifson, who's one of the guys who is behind that page there, he says that, you know, yeah, it is. It's a spin battle. What's going on here? There are people that are interpreting different ways what was said. My issue last week before it came out was basically this: is Inspector General does not say, will that speak louder than what's in the report? So here's the thing. Inspectors General can release any report without giving those people named within that report a chance to contest it. And the Inspector General has to be able to defend every single word of it. They have to stick to facts and completely documentable conclusions. Inductive reasoning, looking at large patterns of facts and drawing conclusions, doesn't survive that process. So the result is, according to Thomas Lifson, a report that's written in kind of a code. And Kimberly Strassel at the Wall Street Journal decodes the Horowitz report on political bias in a tweet thread that she did on the subject. And her first tweet completely takes apart the Democrats saying, you know, there wasn't any bias, none at all. And the mainstream media also said the same thing. And her first tweet is, don't believe anyone who claims Horowitz didn't find bias. He very carefully says that he found no documentary evidence that bias produced specific investigatory decisions. That's different than no bias at all. What it means is he didn't catch anyone doing anything so stupid as writing down that they took a specific step to aid a candidate. You know, like, okay, let's give this guy immunity so nothing comes out that will derail Hillary Clinton for president. So, no, he didn't see anything like that. He didn't see that obvious a smoking gun. But there's still abundance that we can say. The fact is, in her next tweet, Kimberly Castle says, but he, in fact, talking about the inspector general, he, in fact, finds bias everywhere. The examples are shocking and concerning. And he devotes entire sections to them. And he very specifically says in that summary that they cast a cloud on the entire investigation's credibility. In bureau speak, that's a pretty heavy hit right there. Because if the investigation is not credible, then what in the world's going on? Now we have this tweet, excuse me, text messages between a guy by the name of Peter Strzok. Peter Strzok is a former FBI, well, he's currently an FBI agent. However, he was escorted from the FBI building today. I'm not exactly sure about, but he was physically escorted from the premises. At the top of his career, he was head of the FBI's counterterrorism division, the counterintelligence division. He's also the guy that, when this whole email scandal came out, was responsible for editing Jim Comey's statement fundamentally exonerating Hillary Clinton of any wrongdoing. Statement which was written months before the investigation was concluded. Well, Peter Strzok has a girlfriend there over at the Department of Justice. Her name's Lisa Page. And they love Hillary Clinton, and they hate Donald Trump. And they have this text message back and forth. And this is a small piece, but I think it's very telling. Lisa Page texts Peter Strzok and says, "Trump's not ever going to become president, right? Right?" And the steely-eyed G-man replies, "No, no, he won't. We'll stop it." Sounds awfully melodramatic, I know, but that's what was said. And by the way, I just found out earlier today that this exchange, according to details in the Inspector General's report, took extensive forensic cyber work to uncover. Buried deep. Nobody wanted this. Now, this isn't top secret stuff, right? So why wouldn't they want this coming out? Exactly. So meanwhile, these people, and what they were talking about here is the Hillary Clinton email investigation. This Inspector General report has to do with it. So these people that we've just talked about, Peter Strzok, Lisa Page, James Comey, this whole rogues gallery, the Inspector General has now found to have made a giant hash out of the Clinton investigation because of the demonstrated bias seamlessly into Trump-Russian collusion investigation. And we're supposed to think that they got this right? Guys, now there are two more reports pending. This report has to do with the email investigation, the Hillary Clinton email investigation. And Peter Strzok was also on Robert Mueller's investigative team until they found out about this stuff. And he was removed from the investigative team last summer in Resources Division of the FBI, and nobody said a word. They didn't say anything to anybody. They just shuffled this dude off and out of sight. He's still collecting his paycheck until today. I'm guessing if they escorted him out of the building today, he's probably not coming back anytime soon unless he's in handcuffs. So all these things are connected because all these people are deeply enmeshed in these two affairs here. Hillary Clinton's emails and the collusion investigation. Andrew McCabe offered, well, wanted immunity, offered testimony in exchange for immunity. I don't think that's going to happen. I'm not even sure if he's testified yet, but I know that he will. James Comey has refused to testify before Congress. And if and when McCabe does testify and he decides to plead the fifth, that's not going to look good. Clearly, the refusal to testify before Congress is never a good thing. And then to go and simply claim the fifth, ouch. Now, Peter Strzok says he will testify before Congress and he will not invoke the fifth. Not exactly sure how that one's going to roll out, and he must – I don't know. We'll see what happens. That's usually the kind of thing where after somebody says something like that, they're found to have committed suicide by shooting themselves six times in the chest. So I don't know what's going to go on with that one. That'll be something to watch. He's a pretty high-profile guy. And this is all just make, it's all just what, okay? He's a pretty high profile guy and he must be pretty bold or pretty confident if he thought they could do something like that. But more than likely what's going to happen, if he does, he's going to go in, he's going to plead the fifth. They're probably going to ask him questions in such a manner that he won't be able to avoid pleading the fifth. Unless he's a stand-up guy, and he's not a stand-up guy. So he's going to win there as a warm, and he's going to come out even lower. He's mad. Andy McCabe's mad. Now he might be on things that he did, but if they ask him about things that James Comey had done, or he was aware that was done by Loretta Lynch, or any of the other principal players at that time, you can bet your bottom dollar he's going to talk about it. He's straight up going to talk about it. He didn't get a book deal. He didn't get to go on the talk shows. He also didn't get a pension. His reputation is shot. There are two more reports that are due from the Inspector General's office. There are some criminal referrals that the Justice Department has to look through. I have a feeling that this is going to play out kind of like a mob shakedown would work, you know? They get up into the middle range guys. They get away from the street soldiers. And they get up to the capos and the capo regimes. And they start looking at these guys. And that's how, you know, they get those guys. And they wait. They're patient. They let these guys commit their crimes. They get enough on them to where they can really squeeze them. And then they bring them in and they say, hey, this is what we got. And if you don't want to get what we got, you might want to give us what you got. Good. And you know, sooner or later, either they crack or they don't. And that's what's going to happen here. The only thing is, the difference in these two criminal organizations is that these guys aren't as tough as the mob guys. And these guys will rat. Andy McCabe, he's going to rat. He's going to cooperate. Peter Strzok, he's going to cooperate. Lisa Page has been laying awfully low, saying very little to anyone. I'm sure she's going to be talking to somebody. That's going to lead to McCabe. That's going to lead to Comey. That's going to lead to Loretta Lynch. That's going to lead to Christopher Wray, current director. It's going to lead to places that these guys don't want to, you know, they don't want this stuff opened up, but it's going to go there eventually. Now, will anything happen? Now we have another question to talk about. Will they be perp walked? Will anybody see the inside of a jail cell? I hope so. I really do. And I don't hope it out of any sense of retribution or revenge or anything, out of a sense of justice. Because if these guys don't go to jail, then we're no better than any other banana republic that has these kind of high crimes and misdemeanors take place and nothing happens. And that would be sad. All these people screaming about these kids, you know, like they're in concentration camps, talking about that's not who we are. No, letting crooks like Hillary Clinton and James Comey and Andy McCabe and Loretta Lynch and Christopher Wray and Fusion GPS and Hillary Clinton and Bill Wasserman Schultz and Donna Brazile, and the list is freaking endless. Letting those guys get off. Hell, ultimately rewarding them because there's going to be a whole bunch of book deals and these guys are going to have, they're going to be on the talk show circuit. That's not who we are. I'll paraphrase Robert Heinlein, famous science fiction writer. Back in the 80s, he said, we've come to this point in society where the athlete, the professional athlete, the entertainer, these people are important because of their celebrity. And since they're important, then their opinions and what they think and say must be important. And you have a whole group of people giving credence to cretins. Idiocracy. If we're not careful, what we're going to turn into, and the progressive left wouldn't have it any other way. Vigilance, people, vigilance and patience. We got to stay the course. 63 million people voted for Donald Trump to become president, not for the Republican Party, not for John McCain. They voted for Donald Trump because they believed in his vision of restoring this country to her preeminence, and he can't do it by himself. But with 63 million people backing him up, yeah, we can get some stuff done. We're going to have to dig in, and we're going to have to show resolve so we can get some stuff done. Listen, we're down to the bottom of the hour, and I fundamentally have preached enough. Thank you. Top of the hour, rather, at the end of the show. Thank you so much for listening. Again, ACP can be heard here Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time at blogtalkradio.com through the thank you, Penelope, through the studios of the Patriot Nation Radio Network. We'll be back here this Thursday, 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, taking a look at things as we do through a conservative perspective. God bless you all. God bless America. We'll see you Thursday. Care.